670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, 877-881-1053. Frankel and Frankel Injury Attorney text line. If you want to get involved in the conversation or the Twitch or the YouTube, I've got some Cowboys questions that matter following the opener. First question for you guys. Were you sad to see Micah Parsons in a Packers jersey? Because Trayvon Diggs, you know, he quote tweeted a highlight and he's like, this can't be real. Wake me up from the dream. Did it make you sad to see that go down?
Yeah. It was weird because I guess though, I know somebody's going to get really upset about this.
Mm-hmm.
Having just gone through the Lucas situation, though, kind of made this landing a little softer.
Okay.
Because the Luka thing, like, that was, I was gutted emotionally from that. And this, I was like, all right, but that's a player I thought was going to be a stalwart player for the team for years to come. You know, he's just go ahead and make a check mark next to it. He's going to be there for a long time. But I didn't feel the way, I understand why Diggs felt that way. That's his best friend. You know, like, I get that part of it. So I understand. It would be like, if you left and went to a political radio station, I don't know.
Oh.
That's all. You're not leaving to go to another sports station. I know that. Without me,
that's true.
I would feel like, dang, like that's my dude right there. I would be upset, but no, I didn't feel quite like Diggs did. But it did feel a little weird seeing him over there.
Alec, did it make you sad at all?
No, I think weird is the best word to describe watching that. Like, watching the ovation that he got running out of the tunnel and everything. It was like, oh, I've heard that before for the exact same player, you know, just in a different stadium. Seeing the different jersey number, the different colors that he was wearing, it was just weird. I didn't ever really have that emotional connection to the player that I did, like, to Corey's point with Luka, you know, for some reason that maybe there was just more time for that relationship between the fan base and Luka to build versus Parsons. He wasn't here as long, but I just never really felt that. It never screamed Micah Parsons the Dallas Cowboy to me. It hadn't gotten to that point yet. Maybe if a contract extension had been reached, then it's like, okay, that's Micah Parsons the Dallas Cowboy. I just see him as Micah Parsons the entity that is polarizing, that's really good at football. I never saw him as, like, you know, one of the franchise cornerstones of DFW, per se.
Were you guys prepared for the shocking overreaction by some people on social media when he got a sack when it was a 3-touchdown game with less than 4 minutes left and Jared Goff's like, I don't know what to do?
Jared Goff didn't know what to do most of that game.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's just people freaked out like that was the game-winning play.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. It's just Jared Goff struggled with that defense. Like, that entire defense made it very difficult for Jared Goff and for the running game for the Detroit Lions as well. Every time he gets a sack, it's going to be a big deal.
I agree with that.
It's going to be a... Lewis Riddick, you trade a guy like that? That's just ridiculous. You know, like, okay, dude, like, I get it. But no, yeah, everybody's going to react every time something positive happens. I do wonder how often they'll point out any negative things. Will people be pointing those things out too, or will it just be, no, look at all these sacks that he has?
Can this Cowboys team run the ball effectively? Now, they ran for 119 yards on 22 attempts, which is 5 yards per carry. That was the highest Cowboys per carry average in a season opener in 11 years. So that's the positive. Obviously, we've discussed if you take out the one run, it's more like 3.4 yards. But that's not how statistics work. Do you believe this team can effectively run the ball?
I do. I'm interested to see it with Blue if that, you think that Miles Sanders touchdown is a touchdown or play is a touchdown if it's blue?
For sure. I mean, if blue makes the first part of the play,
right? No, yeah, you're absolutely right about that.
No doubt he's taking that in.
He's the only one with what I think is that getaway speed. And we haven't had, I mean, truly that since Pollard. I think that had that kind of just, he's gone. I do think that the offensive line, as it grows, is going to be better. I did, Kevin, rewatching. I saw some things I really liked from Terrence Steele. There were some other things that I was like, dadgummit. But there were some really good moments. Guyton still has some growth. But, man, here's what I'll say. You get in within the 20, I think you can just put your running back right behind the Cooper Beebe and say go. And that's what I'm looking forward to is – let's get into that 20 and see if we can be a better red zone team than we've been the last couple of years.
Alec, do you think this team can run the ball effectively?
I think they can because you do have Blue coming back hopefully this week. And, you know, the idea that we've had is that you are going to have that, you know, third down back, that guy that can catch out of the backfield and can get you a big chunk play whenever you need it. And he didn't even play week one and the run game still looked decent enough. So without him, I thought it looked good enough. If the even the idea that he could get you one, you know, 10 plus yard play per game. If that idea actually exists and that comes to life, then it can be consistent.
Can I ask a question regarding that question and what both of us said there?
Yes.
Will, do you think we're going to have problems securing the ball this year?
I mean, it's hard for me to say no based off of that and Blue's history. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I'm a little like, all right, we'll see later down the road. All right, I'll give you. Let's make that a problem whenever it becomes a problem. Not now, Corey. I got you.
Now, next, you just kind of started to reference it. Could this offensive line for the Cowboys really click and be a strength? The Cowboys offensive front did not give up a sack against the Eagles. Last time Dallas held an opponent to no sacks was the Giants game last November, and there were some encouraging things there.
I'll give a lot of credit to Dak on the no sacks part.
I agree with that.
Getting rid of the ball when he's supposed to instead of holding on to it a little too long. That was like he was really effective at that. But I did. There were other times where that pocket was really nice and clean, and that's all you can ask for, especially against that defense. Now, if Jalen Carter's there, is it that different?
That's a fair question.
Who knows? Either way, game one, he wasn't there. That was his own stupid fault. That's his.
Sure.
So the Cowboys took advantage of it in that way. But I do think that they can. I need Guyton to grow up even faster than he did already, because game one he looked pretty good. And also Tyler Smith, I don't know, man. He had one moment where he reached out and kind of was off balance, and then it created a hole. I'm just not used to seeing him make that kind of play, but I think they're going to be quality, man.
I'm right there with Corey. I think they are going to be quality, and I think it is only going to get better as the year goes on. And what's unfortunately going to be the reality is we're going to have to keep looking back at Guyton's injury in camp and wonder, you know, anytime there is a pressure given up or anytime there is a sack given up, we're going to be like, well, if he didn't miss that time, he was looking good in camp. But I did see enough, you know, looking back at Thursday's game, I was impressed that week one looked as clean as it did across the offensive line. It wasn't perfect by any means, but it looked cleaner than I certainly expected it. So I do think the expectations just kind of move forward going forward.
Now, last question for you right here, specifically about the Cowboys. Will they be able to figure out a way to come back in the fourth quarter? Now, in the last 5 years, and we talked about this some on Friday, the Cowboys were 4-33 when trailing after three quarters. Now they're 4-34. I'm not saying you have to be 500 or anything like that, although Josh Allen could probably figure it out. Do you
think... So they're only good when they're ahead?
Yes.
No, that's not going to change.
Oh, man. That's not great.
Well, you have to be a disciplined team to win in the fourth quarter. When you're down, you have to be disciplined to come back and make plays happen. You got to have a little luck on your side, too, sometimes. Hell, look at last night for sure. Some lucky things happened for Buffalo to get back in position to be able to win that game last night. But you have to be disciplined so to make those comebacks happen and not have sloppy things happen late in the fourth quarter. What I saw from the Cowboys in the first quarter of the football game made me think they are going to be more disciplined this year. I just believe it right now. Last year was kind of a weird season, obviously, with the coach's job in limbo. And
right.
A lot of guys probably like, I don't care. But this year does seem like they are more accountable to each other. So I think that they could get better at it. But, man, that's a terrible stat right there.
Alec?
Painted the perfect picture there, as you usually do with football majors.
Thank you.
Discipline is going to be the biggest thing that either leads them to success in the fourth quarter like that or prevents them from having it. And I do think that it's something that I know everybody here has pretty much talked about it, but I've harped on it a lot, is that this staff seems like they have motives. It seems like they have some sort of ideology that they've really instilled into this group of guys, that we have a plan. We need to execute that plan week in and week out. And there's no reason we shouldn't be doing that if everybody just does their job. And with a Schottenheimer group, I do think that's going to be something that stands out. And I do think it's going to lead to situations where maybe you're a watermelon kick away from winning a game that you shouldn't be winning. You know, you saw it happen a couple times in the McCarthy era. I think you could see it happen a lot more with this group.
Now, speaking of winning games that you probably shouldn't, I'm going to go back to general NFL for just a second, and let's talk about the Cincinnati Bengals.
Gavin Dawson NFL?
Yes.
The general.
The Bengals and Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow finished week one with 113 yards passing and a robust 2.9 yards per offensive play. Joe Burrow had 25 passing yards in the second half. Mm-hmm. And then their offense gave up more sacks, 3, than it had positive plays, 2, in the fourth quarter. Then Cincinnati, 5 of their 6 drives in the second half were 3 and outs. All that being said, they still were up 17-16 late in the game. And now go ahead and give me cut number 10, the Browns. 36-yard field goal to take the lead.
For the lead. And it is no good. He missed it wide to the right. A missed extra point, a missed field goal, and a missed opportunity for the Cleveland Browns.
And the Browns coach has already said he's not ready for a kicking competition, so despite the staggering things that you just heard, they're like, nah, I'm going to go ahead. The Bengals win their first game. They have been notoriously slow starters. How miraculous is it that they won this game despite all the terrible stats I gave you?
No, the numbers, yes, that's a very significant deal. They intentionally went out this year and did more in preseason games so that they would be better for game one. Can you imagine how bad it would have been had they not prepared that way, Kevin?
Oh, my gosh.
Like, they could have lost 16-16.5. I don't know. Like that,
16-15.
Yeah, it would have been weird. But Cleveland, I mean, Joe Flacco, 290 yards. Cleveland didn't run the ball well at all.
Yeah.
And that's something that I don't think we're used to with when it comes to Cleveland.
Maybe they knew that was going to happen because they got a roster exemption for Quinshon Judkins.
Oh, yeah.
Because he signed his fully guaranteed deal, and they were like, oh, this thing is going to suck.
That being said, Trey Hendrickson had a really good game. He also had a penalty on him that was one of those that he was laughing about. He did the crying eyes. It was like, oh, somebody crying over there. But it's really interesting to kind of watch this because Trey Hendrickson was really good. Myles Garrett was damn good, too.
Right.
He was damn good in this game. And it's just, I think we all kind of lost by this game being on.
Oh, okay. Well, surprisingly, one team that won and won emphatically was the Colts. Now, I already played you the Cam Bynum celebration, but also the Colts won 33-8. They were shutting the Dolphins out until the last few minutes. They had more than 400 yards of offense. They scored on every single offensive drive, which I believe is the first time since their disputed stats here, either 1978 or 2000, in the opening week. and it snapped an 11 opening game winless streak for the Colts. They hadn't won the first game since 2013.
Wow. I had heard on Red Zone, I believe, that they had not scored on every possession in the first half of a game since Peyton Manning was there. And so
they made it the whole game.
And so, man, Daniel Jones really showed me, you know, he really did.
He played well.
Congratulations to him. I have thought.
670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
It's on Miami.
That we
are going to get to today. That team looked awful.
Agreed. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for AM on the FM.
We got the question of the day, plus one of the most true curses in sports continues next on The Fan.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We're going to hear from Cowboys head coach Brian Schottenheimer in about 20 minutes. Then at noon, we will talk with Cowboys Executive Vice President Stephen Jones, but right now, it's time for this.
What does this button do? Please, please, do not push the button. You have no idea of what it...
Alec, you be quiet.
Alec, that was awful.
One for Alec, zero for Peyton.
Don't you dare touch that dial.
Don't you dare do it. It is time for AM on the FM. My name is Alec Medford, the man that they call the pride of Mansfield, Texas. 877-881-1053. That is the Frankel and Frankel Injury Attorneys text line to answer today's question of the day, to which a YouTube is available for you as well. Plus, one of the most true curses in sports continues its reign of terror after NFL Week 1. We will get to that here in just a little bit, gentlemen. But the question of the day, we're not going to the national day calendar today. Aww. Because it's like peanut squash day or something.
What the hell is that?
Exactly. I didn't know it existed until about 2.5 minutes ago. So what am I supposed to do with that? I was actually thinking, because I took in as much football as I humanly possibly could yesterday, outside of, you know, having to grocery shop and do stuff that's like essential to living. And I noticed that there were some shakeups and one big shakeup in one of the broadcast booths. So I want to ask you guys in the Tolos.
Smackdown.
Yes. Yes. And some of the misinformation spread about Wade Barrett. Don't talk down on his name, PWN. Yeah. He'll call you out on Twitter for it. But I want to know, how much does the broadcasting lineup in terms of the talent, the announcers, how much does that impact your viewing experience on NFL Sundays? 877-881-1053.
You know, and honestly, I feel like I've been in the minority on this, and so I really want to hear other people's feedback. Almost zero. Like, back when I was younger, and it was almost always the Pat Summerall and John Madden show, I felt like if we didn't get those two, like, what was I even watching? But now, it's almost zero.
I watch so much Red Zone that Scott Hansen just does such a wonderful job at what he does. I don't hear that as much. Now, last night, Collinsworth, Tirico, that was great. Like, they're good at what they do.
I do really like Mike Tirico.
Even though he kept calling Jalen Hurts,
Dak
Prescott,
know
the other night. But so I guess because I love what Scott Hansen does, because he's giving me facts all day long.
Yeah.
There's stuff that I'm like, man, I need to take notes on just what he says all day. So it's really good, but I don't think that it affects me. Like, I can't wait to watch one of the games that they call, but sometimes I'll be in the middle of a game and I'll be like, I really enjoy the information they're giving me. It's like when Mike's on a TV broadcast, I feel like I'm getting a different version, you know?
Alec, I'm going to let you decide, but if at some point we have time in this segment, I would like 45 seconds to tell a story from the Dallas Card Show about Mike.
Oh, yes. We need to get to that ASAP. I do have some sound that I do want to play that goes in relation to this question, and then we'll get the fan text's opinion on this as well, because J.J. Watt was paired up alongside Ian Eagle. And I've seen him do the studio work before. I've seen him on social media. I've seen him on Pat McAfee's show. And I've always thought that he could talk about football very well. But he was extremely entertaining yesterday. And I really enjoyed that Steelers-Jets matchup. One, because it was the game that I did not expect to be as must-watch. But yesterday, I really thought it was going to be Bills and Ravens. But that game was a heck of a game. But that duo was really fun. One, because anytime they did any stand-ups, you realize how actually massive J.J. Watt is.
Oh, my gosh,
and,
yes.
And Ian Eagle in the fourth quarter during a stand-up even joked with him. He's like, I'm really concerned for you. Watch your head. Like, you might hurt yourself.
And somebody had the comment, like, Ian Eagle is a relatively normal-sized human.
Yeah.
Just to, like, put it in perspective.
And this is actually on the penalty that they thought was a penalty, but wasn't a penalty, but was a penalty, because Bill Vinovich got the call wrong. He got the wrong team's jersey number. So it was a low cut by Jalen Ramsey that he initially called on Garrett Wilson because they wear the same jersey number. And this was just like, this was the moment that I realized, okay, I think J.J. Watt's going to be all right at this.
Bill Vinovich in his 20th season as a referee, two stints.
Personal foul, low block, offense number five. 15-yard penalty, repeat third down.
And that is a crusher for the Jets, Garrett Wilson.
Correction. The foul's on the defense. Half the distance of the goal.
Oh, what a switch. That is not a crusher for the Jets. It's the other way, Jalen Ramsey. Quite the opposite.
That was like a WWE heel turn. The ref just switched the emotions of this entire building.
They were having so much fun together during that broadcast, and the insight that he provides as well. He was almost doing some Tony Romo stuff, you know, when he first started broadcasting, where he was calling out coverages and stuff, saying like, hey, in this situation, I'm probably blitzing to try to make this quarterback uncomfortable and trying to mess up the rhythm on this third down play. He was calling out coverages and all that. I thought he was fantastic, and I was like, you know what? That CBS slot where J.J. Watt's going to be running things might be a little bit more intriguing for me, because I thought he did add a lot. So
yeah, I like that breakdown.
I think going forward, he's going to be one that you might actually keep the volume on for.
He's extremely opinionated too. Like, that's the thing that helps so much. Some guys are like, oh man, that's yeah. When in my day, you know, and you get a lot of that. And I like the ones that have opinions on what's happening on the field, are explaining why what's happening on the field is happening. He's really well educated in what he sees on the field too, and aren't just explaining what you just saw. Like, a lot play-by-play guys, they have the role of setting the table for all that.
Right.
And then the color guy gets his opportunity to really give you the emotion of all of it. And I think J.J. Watt does a pretty good job of that.
From the 817, the World Series just still doesn't seem right to me without Joe Buck's voice. From the 817, Collinsworth makes my head hurt. from the 469, not a fan of Scott Hansen. I think he's one of the better broadcasters, one, because of the power, the sheer willpower it takes to get through one of those broadcasts. But like you said, Corey, he's just got limitless information about almost any player at any given time. Like, just watch any clip of Red Zone. It seems like he's got something ready to go about anybody. From the 254, I sync up the TV with Cowboys radio. That's a great idea,
nice,
if you ask me. And then I see from the 945, doesn't affect me at all. I was watching Red Zone on mute yesterday, listening to The Fan on my Alexa, so having sports talk on while watching. So lots of different opinions here, and appreciate the interaction there, because for me, I feel like, at least nowadays, I know a lot of my friends watch on mute, and I feel like I'm in the minority. I'm trying to get any kind of extra bit of information from the analyst and from the play-by-play guys, you know? And sometimes, hey, I don't want to do the math on the field goal distance, you know, on my own. So I let Ian Eagle do it for me. Yes, I know it's plus 17, 18 yards, whatever. I don't want to do the math. I'm sitting in my chair chilling on a Sunday. I'm not supposed to be thinking. I'm supposed to be enjoying. So sometimes I want them to do the heavy lifting for me. It's a really easy process there.
Alec, real quick, they said Mbop is an annoying song. They were making a play on the name Hanson. That's that was they. So I don't know if they really even do like Scott Hansen or not. So now,
and I like this from the 6-8 too. I listen to the Spanish broadcasting. It's hype.
That's
Listen to Victor Villalba's calls of some of the biggest Cowboys plays this season, and you won't be mad.
That is so true, and they've started to do that more and more with WWE as well. And I'm like, man, that emotion is off the page.
Yes, the alternate language broadcasts, and we play a lot of them on this station, especially like with some of the big playoff matchups that you'll see. You can't understand, the common American viewer won't understand most of the buildup, but then you hear them just lose their mind saying the player's name, and you can pinpoint the exact moment that the shot went in or the touchdown was scored, and you're just like, yes, give me all of it.
Although I will always give Derek Harper credit for going, got it on that shot before it goes in. But if you want to talk about emotion, just real quick, it's a great transition. This dude at the Dallas Card Show, I was talking to Mike. He came up from another angle and he was like, hey, Mike, how's it going? And then I said something. He goes, oh, my God, it's you too, Kevin. And we started talking and he took a step back and he goes, you guys are doing the show right now in front of me. This is the greatest day of my life. And it was amazing.
That is
so
awesome.
Like, I really, really love that.
That is awesome. And but being at the card show on Saturday was awesome. It was a madhouse as usual. Stopped by RJ Duke's setup. Had to go say hi to the boys. My favorite table there up in the back left corner.
Everybody needs you there, Corey.
Yes. We need to make it happen. We need to make a little show trip out there for the next one. But yeah, all kinds of great stuff going on out there. Ran into Drew Pearson out there. Always good to see the Hall of Famer. And Brandon Aubrey was out there too. Saw him sign an autograph when we were on the way.
Shouldn't he be practicing kicking field goals?
Did you not see him on Thursday? He's fine.
He's nails. I think he's okay. And guys, one of the most true curses in the world of sports continues to be true. Because we talked about it, the most back and forth, the most energetic game of the week was last night on Sunday Night Football. It was Ravens-Bills. And a certain someone put $250,000 on the Baltimore Ravens.
Was it Drake?
To win the game. And it was won. Drake. He posted a picture on Instagram of course, he might be in debt at this point. The amount that he posts different ads and stuff for steak. He posted his steak slip of him posting about $250,000, just north of $250,000, on the Baltimore Ravens to win this game for a payout of $460,000. So, yeah, he had a tough beat yesterday.
670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he is here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Today, I saw some other tough beats from that game alone, includes Josh Allen's rushing yard total. He was over by a half yard until the three kneel downs.
That shouldn't count. I
hate that. At the end of the game.
That sucks.
Which sucks. And a pro bettor, Sean Perry, at Sean Perry Wins on Twitter. This is a guy that has a ton of money and does this for a living and documents all of his big bets. He put $200,000 on the Ravens to win this game as well. And so much confidence running through the veins of one Sean Perry that he tweeted at whoever runs this resort he put the bet at. He said, how much more do I got to win till I shut down your sports book and I give you guys a $1,000 discount on an early payment? Up 27-13, but it's already over. To which, just it looks like about an hour and a half later is when this game would have went final.
Whoops.
He was wrong. So don't take that victory lap a little bit too early, because then you might look like a dummy like Sean Perry on Twitter.
I shouldn't feel this way, but I definitely have some schadenfreude for people like that who are already running their mouth when it's still going on. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 through the Fan. Coming up next, let's hear from Dallas Cowboys head coach Brian Schottenheimer right here on the Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. There is, of course, NFL galore. We will hear from Shoddy in just a minute, and then we will talk with Stephen Jones at noon. A couple more things this weekend. Now, I know you were hoping for it. Travis Hunter did not play 145% of the snaps for the Jags, based off of my math. He played 39 offensive snaps, 62% of the time, and only 6 defensive snaps, 10% of the time. So he only played a total of 72% as opposed to the 145% that I was hoping for.
That's brutal, man. You know, considering we really had thoughts on that.
Yeah, a lot of math went into that. And then were you watching intently on Cam Ward?
Yeah, I was.
12 for 28, 112 yards, probably more relevant for him and for the team in general. He got sacked 6 times.
Yeah.
And all of their points came from their kicker.
He faced a tremendous amount of pressure throughout the day. That was one of the biggest problems for him. I thought he had a couple of throws that I was like, man, those are really solid NFL throws. He looks like he's kind of finding a groove, but as soon as he would find that, the pressure just came back. And that's, hey man, that's what happens whenever you're playing one of the best defenses in the league too. Like, you got cornerbacks that are fantastic. You got guys flying all over the field, and you just got to, it's kind of a grow up quickly kind of situation.
Now, the good and the bad for the Raiders. So Geno Smith, oh, we got Shoddy ready to go. Brought to you by Ford right here on 105 Through the Fan.
Calvin Watkins, Dallas Morning News. What's the message to your group as you begin a new week?
Just that. It's a new week. Guys are in today. We watched the review of the Eagles game. You know, it's always a little harder to do it 3 days after because you'd rather do it the day after when it's fresh. But just pointed out the good, the things we did well, things we need to do better, and then how we're going to do that. And then take a little lunch break, which we're on now, and then do the Giants intro. So, you know, we never change. Our process always stays the same.
Is your philosophy the 24-hour rule, or is it, in this case, you had like 48 hours because you saw CD. Obviously, he was upset about the game. He's working out. How do you try to move on?
Well, the rule I abide by is the midnight rule. That's a Marty Schottenheimer rule. Midnight, and we didn't get done until I think after midnight. So, his thing was always, hey, you play the game, you have till midnight to feel sorry for yourself or be excited. And then once midnight hits at 12:01, you move on to the next opponent because there's another great team coming in. You know, sitting around watching football yesterday, you know, Calvin, I mean, the league is exactly where they want to be. You know, very good football teams, very close games, the parity is real. So I really do believe that's important. This one carries over a little bit just because of the fact that, again, the league mandates you give the guys a couple days off, so you had to touch on today. We don't shy away from having hard conversations or celebrating big wins. Like I said, the process is always the same.
Brian, Todd Archer with ESPN. You guys didn't allow a sack to the Eagles. Now you're facing another pass rush that seems to be pretty good as well. When you have a young line, how do you tell them, like, hey, good job, but now get ready for these guys?
It's a humbling business, man. They know that. They each week has its own challenges, Todd, and this is an incredible front coming in here. They've obviously added, you know, Abdul Carter, high draft pick, good player, but with, you know, Dexter inside and Burns and Thibodeau and, you know, big Bobby Okereke fan. I think he's a hell of a football player. And but I was proud of the guys last game. Again, wasn't perfect, you know, but we played physical. That was the big thing that jumped off the film, even watching again with the players this morning, was how physical this football team played. And I think if we play as physical as we did the other night, we play with the discipline that we had the other night, then I think we'll feel good going into most weeks that we'll find a way to get a victory.
And Javonte, was that the touches that you want, like ultimately you'd like to see from him on a week-to-week basis, or is that something you think might rotate around?
No, I think Javonte's kind of, he's clearly the starter right now. But again, we didn't have many attempts at the plate. You know, I wish we could have gotten a few more attempts at the plate. And defense gave us a chance there late to, you know, you know, put the game away with a win and victory with a touchdown. We didn't do that. But I thought, you know, overall, Javonte played the game the right way, man. If you watch him, he showed how physical he is as a runner, but also without the ball. We ran a little speed sweep. I think it was the second play of the game where he comes out and he's blocking Cooper DeJean. And then there's a chip on a two technique earlier in the game and at some point in the game. And I'm excited for Javonte and what he brings to our offense.
John Michaud with The Athletic. On the outside going into that game, it was kind of tough to know what you guys would be because of the new pieces, new coaching staff, not doing much in the preseason with a lot of those guys. Was there anything when you watched the film that maybe exceeded your expectations?
I wouldn't say exceeded our expectations, John. I mean, you know, we're a very confident group. I'm confident in the guys that we have in that locker room. I do think the physicality jumps off, but I'll also speak to the discipline. I mean, to go into that environment, it was loud. It was, as it should be, opening night of the NFL regular season 2025. And, you know, our guys played discipline. We had the one pre-snap penalty, which is more on us as coaches with the 12 men on the field. And, again, when you do that, if you have that type of discipline, you play with that type of physical standard of football, and then, you know, you carry that into not beating yourselves. You know, we didn't really beat ourselves much. We didn't have a lot of penalties and a lot of self-inflicted wounds. You know, the one turnover, that cost us, certainly. But the first thing that jumps out would be the physicality.
And then how'd you come out of the game health-wise?
Pretty good, pretty clean. You know, for a physical game like that, like I just talked about the physicality, I think we should be in pretty good shape. I'll get an update here. We'll know a lot more come Wednesday.
Nick. Nick Harris for Star Telegram. Brian Daboll said yesterday after the Giants game that he wasn't necessarily committing to Russell Wilson as a starter. As far as prepping for two quarterbacks during the week, what does that look like for you guys? And is there much of a challenge that goes into that?
Well, first of all, Dave's a really good friend of mine. We were together with the Jets. He's never going to give you guys much. He's smart. He's been around Bill, Coach Belichick. But, again, you know, I know Russ very well. Won a lot of games together in Seattle. Can't wait to see him. And then, of course, there's video of Jackson from college in the preseason. Supposedly played great in the preseason. I didn't see that. So we'll be ready for both of them. But, again, we're just starting our prep. And, again, we'll see how they play. Supposedly they're going to have a package for Jackson yesterday anyways.
And then with Marshawn Nealon, what's kind of seen or not seen behind the scenes as far as his work ethic goes or whatever that prepares him for, you know, a situation on Thursday night where he had a good game?
Same guy every day, Nick. I mean, literally the same guy every day. The guy that the world saw run around on that football field and play physical and get the sack and chase things down. And he had a great, you know, strip attempt on Saquon that didn't come out. He is the same guy each and every single day. And that consistency, I talk about a lot up here, right? The consistency is what jumps off the film, even at someone like myself that's around them every day. And now it's like the league knows. The league knows how talented this young man is, but it's because of his work ethic, his love for the game of football, and he plays the game the right way. And you can't go into that game and not have confidence knowing that, you know, he's a terrific young football player that's only going to continue to ascend.
Tom.
Tommy Arsh, DallasCowboys.com. You talked about with Mozzie, consistency is something you want to see. Some of the other younger guys who are game day inactives, like a Jaden Blue or Shamar James, what do they need to show you during the week to kind of continue to earn your trust and earn the trust of the staff?
Well, you kind of answered your own question there, Tommy, because it is consistency. You know, at the end of the day, young players, it hits at different times, you know, and I'll talk about, you know, Jaden. He's extremely talented. I mean, he really is talented, but there's a way you have to perform, especially with a mantra of compete every day. I mean, you know, if you're not putting it out there and you're not doing right every day, and if you take a step back on a Thursday, maybe he did great on Wednesday and on Thursday, I'm not saying he did, but that's going to get noticed. And this is an incredibly talented roster, and you have to earn your chance to get out there. It's not because I was the first overall pick of the draft or whatever it is. A Like, there's got to be a consistency. And I will speak to a guy like Tyler Booker. He's not been perfect. He didn't play perfect. But Tyler Booker has been very, very consistent. You know each and every day what you're going to get from Tyler Booker. And I think some of the young guys that were inactive, we've had those hard conversations with them. They understand where they need to go. And I have no question that they will respond to that. Will that be this week? I don't know. We'll see. But the cool thing for them is they can determine that. You know, and they might have a great week of practice, but because of numbers, they could be still inactive, or they could have a average week and we end up needing them to step up because of different things that happen. But consistency is clearly the thing that we're always looking for with young players.
Scott Ricks with the AP. I asked you last week a little bit about third QBs. I had one follow-up. Now that you've played a game without the emergency QB, and you've indicated that you have emergency QB plans if you don't want to share, do you think the league still needs that third QB provision on game day, or is that maybe an overreaction to that playoff game?
Yeah, probably. Again, I go back and forth. I literally, you asked the question, so my mind is processing. It'd be great to be able to have three guys active just in case. But they certainly, you know, have done the studies and know kind of what they're looking for. But, you know, last year we obviously with Trey Lance, we carried the three, and you know, there's limitations of when they can go in and when they go in, how it looks. But we're all dealt with the same cards, and you decide how you want to use your roster. And again, to steal a line from Tom Moore, I remember when I was in New York, he came and was consulting with us, and he always talked about, you know, Peyton Manning. And he said, you know, you see number 18 in there? And I was like, yeah, we were watching some Colts film. And he's like, well, if he's not in there, we're basically effed. And I would do Tom's voice, but it was just great. And I was just kind of like, interesting comment. But, you know, look, at the end of the day, this is a quarterback-driven business, man. And so the biggest thing for me is that you should always be trying to develop your quarterbacks. And if you're forced to play your third or your fourth quarterback, it could be a tough road.
Joe Hoy, Dallas Morning News. One more question about Marshawn Nealand. Obviously, Marcus Lawrence was going to be a pending free agent. This guy used a second-round pick on. What did you see from Marshawn Nealand kind of last year, learning from DeMarcus Lawrence to potentially kind of take over that role like he is this year?
Yeah, number one, Marshawn is a sponge, and he learns from everybody. But, like, I think D-Law did a great job really leaning into him last year. And, you know, they are very similar. The play style, the aggressiveness, the violence in their hands, and the instincts that they play on. Again, I think that's what we're trying to build, you know. And I think meaning when practice ends today, I hope there's a handful of our veterans, or normally is, that stay out there with a young guy or two to lean into them. Not just because we want you guys to see it on camera. It's because it's going to help us. Is it going to help us this week? I don't know. But it sure as hell is going to help us 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks down the line. And so we have the right type of culture. And when you have your veteran players, again, going back, staying out there and spending time with your young players, I think that's a huge, 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 huge advantage. And, you know, I've seen it with multiple of our vets.
Dak obviously prioritized using his legs this offseason, mobility, kind of trying to train that up again. You guys didn't allow a sack, but there were pressures. How much of that is a testament to what Dak was able to do from his mobility standpoint, and what did you see from that work in the offseason kind of translating?
Well, number one, he looks great. Just, you know, physically he looks great, but, you know, pass protections, it incorporates everybody. You know, it incorporates receivers getting open. It incorporates him making good decisions. It's obviously the pass protection unit as a whole. It's the running back. So it's really not just one thing. But that's a very, very good front that we played. And, you know, they've got the ability to affect passers. And I think, you know, for the most part, we did a really, really good job of going through our progressions, getting the ball out of our hand. But when he had to move, he moved, and he moved well.
Garrett Podell, CBS Sports. Brian, George Pickens, he had 4 targets in the last game. Was that a game plan thing, or is that more Stack's first game back and he's just really excited to throw 13 to CeeDee Lamb?
No, again, you know, each week's going to be different. You know, Garrett, I mean, George is an incredible player. They did cloud to him quite a bit, but You know, each week's going to be different, and you never go in and say, okay, well, you get 13 or 14 this week and you get four. Like, we never do that. Really, the ball kind of goes, you know, certain spots. Looking back at the film, you know, even watching with Dak a little bit ago, there was one or two potential possibilities where the ball should have gone to George. And the cool thing about George is, like I said, he was so into the game, you know, like he affects the game in a good way. And, you know, I never felt one time like he was pressing, which is a great thing.
The conversation like, you know, entering this week, new player like him, contract year, wide receiver, where they kind of have to ask for the ball. What's that like, you, the play caller, going to a receiver like that and talking after a week where it's only that kind of number?
Well, it's funny, and I didn't have it with George. I should have probably had it with George, but I showed CD before the game all of his targets. So on the back of your call sheet, you've got to get the ball to certain people. And like, it was like this: okay, CD, look at all your targets. And then literally George's was right below him. I was like, okay, then look at all of George's targets. So it's like, obviously the way we're designing the game plan is to feature your playmakers. And it's very evident that those two guys are elite players. I think that's why Vic and those guys played us the way they did. That's why I think the running game is so important, because I think we're going to see quite a bit of split safety or shell coverage, because they're going to respect our guys on the outside. Because if you play them one-on-one, you know, the defense is at a disadvantage. So
670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.